with the sweep and fury of the resurrection. There's a new world a-coming. Today and every Sunday at this hour, WMCA, in cooperation with the Citywide Citizens Committee on Harlem, brings you a series of vivid programs on Negro life based on the theme of Roy Ottley's book, New World A-Coming, produced and directed by Mitchell Grayson. We take pride today in presenting the first of a two-part dramatization of Howard Fast's great novel of the post-Civil War era, Freedom Road, dramatized by Michael Sklar and starring Frederick O'Neill as Gideon Jackson.
Here is a brave chapter in the history of our nation, a chapter out of the buried story of the Reconstruction of the South, the tale of a search for freedom that began when the last shot of the Civil War was fired, a search that continues to this day. It was the year 1867. The Civil War was over, and 4 million black men were free. Free to choose their own leaders, and if chosen, they could lead. One of these men was Gideon Jackson. Tall and strong, he came home from the war to South Carolina, home to the Carwell Plantation, where he had once lived as a slave. And now his people had named him as their delegate to help shape the new laws, which would be framed at the State Constitutional Convention. This was a great honor for any man. But Gideon Jackson was troubled, deeply troubled. Now he sits leaning against his corn crib with Brother Peter, the old colored minister of Carwell, beside him.
Old sun feel mighty good today, Gideon.
Yeah, Brother Peter, it sure does.
What's troubling you, son?
Huh?
I say, what's troubling you?
Well, it's that convention I got elected to.
Well, why that cause you to frown your brow, son?
Well, Peter, I ain't got no schooling. I can't neither read nor write. And what business I got at a convention?
Well, the folks choose you, Gideon.
But I don't know nothing about no convention,
bro. Oh, I reckon you learn, son.
Now, how I gonna know a good law from a bad law?
Oh, now, come. How do you know a good man from a bad man?
Well, that's easy, but the laws, that's different.
Oh, no, Gideon, they ain't so different. Good laws is for the people, and bad laws is against them.
Well, show me how come.
Well, now, how come you got no reading and no writing, Gideon?
Well, there never was no school for the colored folks, and good enough for the poor white folks either.
Uh-huh. Now, that's a start. Make a law for schooling. See what I mean, son?
Yeah.
And now, here's another thing. You take this Carwell place, 20,000 acres. Now, Mr. Dudley Carwell's going away. Who does the land belong to?
Well, I guess it don't belong to nobody.
And the colored folks and the poor whites worked this here land. Don't you reckon it ought to belong to us that worked it?
Yeah, that's right.
Make another law. Plenty of land for all.
Doggone, you know all the answers, Brother Peter. How come you ain't elected to that convention?
Well, the folks didn't ballot me, son.
It'd be better if they did.
Oh, no, son. I'm an old man near the end of my road. Now, you're young. Only 36. Only just beginning.
But I was ignorant.
Don't fret yourself, Gideon.
Gideon.
There's your wife, son.
We over here by the corn crib, Rachel.
Gideon, postman brought you here this letter.
Oh, well. Say, you read it for me, will you, Brother Peter?
Oh, sure, Gideon. It's from the Yankee Army General in Charleston.
What'd he say?
Well, now, he says that the Congress of the United States wants you to help in the reconstruction of South Carolina. In 2 weeks, you got a report at the State Constitutional Convention. Here, these here papers is your credentials.
2 weeks?
Mm-hmm.
You hear that, Rachel?
When you start, Gideon?
Well, right away, I guess. There's a powerful lot of walking between here and Charleston.
2 weeks of tramping the dusty, stony roads. 2 weeks of sleeping in fields and haystacks. 14 days of tramping through the villages and past the sprawling plantations. And finally, Gideon reached Charleston. He was dirty, ragged, and weary. But the precious credentials were in his pocket. Now he counted for something. In Charleston, he walked briskly through the streets. But his eyes were turned inward on himself. His people now counted for something. That thought filled him with warm pride. He didn't see the white man walking toward him, and so he failed to yield the pavement.
Why, blast your black hide, nigger. Let that teach you to keep your place.
Gideon clenched his fist, drew back his arm to strike, but a Negro bystander stepped between him and his opponent.
Put your hands back in your pockets. Don't start a fight.
Well, he hit me. You seen that?
He's walking away. Let him go. I know that man. He hates Negroes. Let's get away from here before he returns with hoodlums and starts trouble.
Francis Cardoza was the man who intervened. He was well-educated, well-dressed, and by Gideon's standards, he was wealthy. Like Gideon, he was a delegate to the Constitutional Convention. But unlike Gideon, his family had been freedmen for generations. As they walked through the streets of Charleston, Cardoza explained the situation in the city.
Most of the poor whites are on our side, Mr. Jackson. But some white trash and all of the cotton planters are against the convention.
Well, why?
Slaves were the cotton planters' greatest stock of property. The new convention, among other things, will declare slavery illegal. So they boycott the convention. They sit behind closed shutters. We don't know what they are plotting.
Well, you said something about bloodshed.
It adds up to this, Mr. Jackson. Tonight, on the eve of the convention, Charleston is a powder keg. It needs only a spark to set off the explosion. But enough of that. Tell me something about yourself. Were you a slave?
Mm-hmm.
A field hand?
That's right.
How do you see this business of a new constitution?
Wait, you mean what I want from the constitution?
Yes, your ideas.
Well, I just want learning. I want it for everybody, black and white. Want land where a man can grow a crop. Don't want no man to push me off the sidewalk. Do that make sense to you?
It makes very good sense, Mr. Jackson.
Cardoza felt deeply drawn towards this giant black man who, in spite of his backcountry speech, was able to phrase the profoundest aspirations of his people. He took Gideon to his home, fed him, gave him a place to wash and clean clothes, and arranged for his lodgings. That night, as Gideon was about to leave, Cardoza reached out and drew 2 books from a bookshelf.
Take these books. Study them.
Them learning books?
They will do for a beginning. This one is on the usage of the English language. This is a basic speller. I hope I haven't offended you.
No, sir. I'm ignorant, Mr. Cardoza, and I ain't ashamed to admit it.
You will learn quickly.
Well, I hope so. Mr. Cardoza, there's just one more book I'd like to have. I'd like to learn that book, that Shakespeare book.
Shakespeare?
Yes, sir.
Which book is that?
Well, it's about a man named Othello.
Othello? I have it here on the shelf. But where on earth did you ever hear of Othello?
A man in the Union Army told me about it. Said it was about a Negro. I sure would like to read that book, Mr. Cardoza.
Armed with the books, Gideon Jackson took huge strides along Freedom Road. The nights he spent in his room studying. The days he spent at the convention, speaking now and then when he found the courage. It was at the convention that Cardoza introduced him to Stephen Holmes, a white man, an aristocrat.
I'm honored to meet you, Mr. Jackson. I heard your speech yesterday on education. You said education was like a gun. What did you mean by that?
Well, the way I see it, a man with education can't be a slave. That learning gives him freedom.
Mm-hmm.
It's better than a gun for giving a man freedom.
I see.
Once he got it, nobody can't take education away from him.
Weren't you a slave, Mr. Jackson?
I sure was.
Aren't you afraid slavery may come back?
Well, it could happen. And it will happen if we don't get some education for the people.
You know, I find myself in agreement with you, Mr. Jackson. Yes, that's an interesting analysis. Look, I'm having some friends to dinner at my home tomorrow night. Would you do me the honor of being my guest, Mr. Jackson?
Well, I...
No, please. I want you to come. After all, if black men and white men are to work together...
All right, sir. I'll come.
Good. Here's my card. Dinner at 8 o'clock. Now I must be going. Good day, Mr. Jackson.
Goodbye,
Mr. Cardoza.
Good day.
Francis, who is this man, Mr. Holmes?
He puzzles me, Gideon. Before the war, he was a plantation owner. Lost his land for debt and taxes. Now he collaborates at the convention with the Negroes and the poor whites. The only man of his class to do so.
Well, why do you reckon he'd do that?
I don't know.
You know, he got the feel of a grass snake about him, Francis. I don't like him.
Yet he invited you to dinner at his home.
Yeah, and that's what's troubling me. Maybe when I go to his home, I'll find out what's on his mind.
The mansion of Stephen Holmes was rich and impressive. As Gideon walked through the endless, luxuriously furnished rooms, the fears of his childhood came back. Once again, he was a slave. A slave intruding in his master's house. And when Stephen Holmes introduced him to the other guest at the dinner table, the name was a stunning shock.
Mr. Jackson, this is Mr. Dudley Carwell. I believe you were one of Mr. Carwell's field slaves only a few years ago.
The shock of the meeting drove the mist from Gideon's mind. He sat down to table, self-composed, facing his former master.
You've come up in the world, Gideon.
Well, the world is changing, Mr. Carwell.
Not for the better.
But that depends on how you look at it.
Jackson. Where'd you get the name of Jackson? How was you didn't take my name when you were free?
Well, that's the story, Mr. Carwell. I got my name in the Yankee Army. The Yankee captain, he say, you got to have a last name, Gideon. Who owned you? And I tell him this. I say, the man who owned me for a slave, his name I ain't never gonna take. And I say, what about Jackson?
Insult me, you black swine. Get out of here.
I will.
You know, Holmes, this black devil's mocking us.
He brought me here to mock at me. Well, I reckon I can go now.
Holmes. Why'd you bring me here to dinner, that nigger? Who said there was a reason?
There is a very good reason. That nigger was once your slave. You see what he is now?
Let's keep this guy.
No, Carwell. A man intelligent enough to meet us on equal terms. Accept him for what he is, Carwell. A representative example of 4 million blacks here in the South.
I'll be damned
now,
if
now, listen to me. That nigger is self-educated. When the Negroes and the white trash get universal compulsory education, we planters will be finished.
You'll never get there.
It's on its way, Carwell. The convention has already written such a clause for the new constitution. Another thing. The convention will move to break up the plantations into small farms. There you'll have the end of the plantation system in the South.
My God. Where do we stand, Stephen?
We planters need an organization and a plan.
Yeah.
There's the Ku Klux Klan. This business of wearing nightshirts and burning crosses has its attractions for the simple mind.
Ah, but a clan of the week, a few night riding murders.
We'll build it. We'll appeal to the scum we use for overseers. The trash that bought and sold slaves. The kind whose only virtue is a white skin. We'll build those men into a mighty army. In 3 years, perhaps 6, the clan shall be ready to strike. And the Emancipation Proclamation will be as worthless as the paper on which it was written.
So it was in the year 1868 in South Carolina. In the foreground were the freed slaves and the scallywags, poor whites who had joined with the Negroes to create a free and democratic Southland. And in the background lurked the plotting cotton planters and the Ku Klux Klan. The convention finished its business and Gideon returned to Carwell and learned that the plantation was going on the auction block. Money was needed to buy the land, and in his innocence, Gideon went to the banker in Columbia.
You want me to give you a draft on this bank to bid for land in a public auction?
Well, no, sir, not just a draft. It'd be a mortgage on the land.
I don't approve of Negroes owning land. It spoils them. That's all, Jackson. I'm a busy man.
The bankers of Charleston were no more receptive than the bankers of Columbia. They banked for the cotton planters, and they were outraged at the thought that a Negro should want to own land. To their mind, Negroes should remain field hands. And so, discouraged, Gideon finally went to Francis Cardoza and told his story to his friend.
Does this really surprise you, Gideon?
No, I reckon I kind of halfway expected it down inside.
Gideon, your way will not work. The people will only get land when the Congress passes a law dividing up the plantations.
That's going to take a long time.
It's the only way it can be done.
I can't wait that long. If I can't find the money here, I'm going to find it in New York or Boston.
Gideon, let's make a bargain. Now, I know Isaac Wendt, a Boston banker, an old abolitionist. I'll give you a letter to him that will carry some weight. In return, I want your promise that you will stand for the state legislature in the next election.
Why do you want to make a politician out of me, Francis?
Men live by politics, Gideon. I know you'll make a good one.
All right, Francis. It's a bargain. I run.
Good.
That's settled. Now I'd like to leave for the North mighty soon, tomorrow if I can.
The train that carried Gideon Jackson northward raced into a new world. Washington was a city of muddy streets and glittering white palaces. New York was a foreign nation, monstrous with its teeming millions, its size, and its power. In contrast, the quiet streets of Boston were a relief to Gideon's eyes. Isaac Wendt's house might have been a house in Charleston. Wendt himself was old and sharp and brittle, an aristocrat whose heart was with the common man.
That's right. Sit down.
Thank you, sir.
John Brown sat in that chair, Mr. Jackson. He wanted money for guns. He was going to march through the South and sweep away slavery like the wrath of God. And I gave him the money. Every man who sits in that chair asks me for money.
Well, I ain't asking you for charity, Mr. Wendt.
Your project sounds fantastic. You would need at least $15,000 in mortgage money. I'm a banker, and I must ask myself, do a handful of former slaves and a few poor whites make a good investment? What is my security?
Well, you asked me about security, so... Well, here it is. The country's hungry for cotton. Yeah. If you give my people 5 years on their own land, they'll break their backs putting in the cotton, and we'll pay you back every cent with a profit.
I'm not interested in profit.
Well, you just said that...
Never mind what I say. It's hard for an old man to let go of his money.
Then you will lend it?
Oh, it's the most damn fool thing I ever put money into. Gideon, you're costing me $15,000, three times as much as old John Brown and his guns.
Well, Mr. Wendt, I promise you, you won't be sorry.
Gideon left Isaac Wendt with a check in his pocket. And the train that carried him back through the crowded cities of the North ran on singing wheels. A new life was opening for Gideon and his people. Tomorrow's dawn was rising. But behind its golden promise was the gathering menace of the Klan. The moon was full on the night before Gideon returned to Carwell, casting a silvery light on the colored people sitting in front of their houses. Then men on horseback came riding up the path. They wore white hoods, and their guns gleamed in the moonlight. The people of Carwell were frightened and ran toward their shacks.
Shoot the blacks! Kill those caretakers!
Rachel, stop your tears, honey.
I can't help it.
What happened while I was gone? Oh, Brother Peter, was it Marcus? Jenny? Did the Klan?
It was the Klan, but it wasn't your child, Gideon.
Who was it?
Little Jackie Sherman.
Well, how did it happen?
4 nights ago, the Klan burned the cross in the west pasture. Last night, they came up on the road on horseback, shot at the people. When they rode away, We found little Jackie on the ground.
Dave, Lord, give us and take us away.
Did you go to the sheriff? Did you tell Major Shelton at Army headquarters in Columbia?
I did all that, Gideon.
Well, what'd they say?
Oh, they said measures would be taken, but they ain't done nothing.
Well, we're going to protect ourselves from now on.
Well, how are you going to do that?
Well, we 37 grown men here at Carwell. We got guns. We're going to form ourselves into a militia.
Gideon, no.
Yes.
No.
Don't
That's
be frightened.
That's a big step, son.
I got the money up north, Brother Peter. We're going to buy the land. As long as we got guns to defend ourselves, the Klan won't try to take it away from us.
So the 30 black men and the 7 white men on the Carwell plantation formed themselves into an armed militia. They bought the land and they divided it among themselves. And they thought the Freedom Road ended there, on the boundaries of their acres. Then Francis Cardoza came to visit Gideon at the plantation.
Gideon, you said you would run for the legislature. I'm holding you to your promise.
Now it was November again. A year had passed since the men of Carwell named Gideon their delegate to the convention. Once more, they walked the long miles to Columbia and cast their ballots. And when the votes were counted, Gideon Jackson, ex-slave, former soldier in the Union Army, was a member of the South Carolina State Congress.
Well, you had your way, Francis.
I'm glad, Gideon.
Sometimes I'm mighty frightened. I can recollect where I began. I know I come far. But I sure don't know where I'm going.
The first time I saw you, Gideon, I knew you for a leader of our people. Your feet will stay on the ground. You will follow the right path. And perhaps someday, the path will take you to the Federal Congress in Washington.
So it was in the year 1868. 4 million black men were tasting the first sweet fruits of freedom and democracy. They had sloughed off the chains of slavery. They had changed. And in changing, they had wrought a transformation in the Southland. They thrust forward their own good leaders and marched toward the future, hand in hand with their neighbors, the white tenant farmers. They sang a song. Old John Brown, granddaddy, we're coming. We're coming down Freedom Road.
You have been listening to the first installment of a dramatization of Freedom Road, Howard Fast's powerful novel of the post-Civil War years in the South. The second and final installment of this important book will be presented next week at this same time. Today's dramatization was written by Michael Sklar and produced and directed by Mitchell Grayson. Music by James Lazito was under the direction of Jerry Sears. Members of the cast included Fred O'Neill as Gideon Jackson, Frank Wilson as Peter, Hilda Sims as Rachel Jackson, Will Gear as Dudley Carwell, Juano Fernandez as Francis Cardoza, Paul McGrath as Stephen Holmes, Sanford Beckert as the banker, and Alex Scorby as the narrator. We are grateful to Duell, Sloan, and Pierce, publishers of Freedom Road, for permission to dramatize the book. New World A-Coming is based on Roy Otley's bestseller by the same name. To attend a broadcast of New World A-Coming, address your requests for tickets to station WMCA, New York, 19 New York. Your announcer, George Willard, this is America's leading independent station.